The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Happy Monday. Welcome to The Big Show on a Flames game day. Calgary getting set to take on the Ottawa Senators tonight. 4 o'clock warm-up, 5 o'clock puck drop means we are jammed on the program today. I'm Peter Klein. He is Will Nault. Our producer today is Logan Gordon, and we are going to get right to it. Off the top of the show, we welcome in former Calgary Flames defenseman Corey Saric. Corey, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. It was a full weekend of hockey for the Calgary Flames with a game Friday and Saturday before having the off day yesterday leading into tonight's matchup with the Ottawa Senators. A lot of talk going into Friday's game about looking for a response after not the best effort in the previous outing for Calgary. Did you see the response and kind of the buy-in continue after a bit of a blip on the radar the other night for Calgary?
Yeah, I definitely did. I thought they got off to a good start again, the Flames. They did exactly what they wanted at the start of that game in Toronto. And let's look back to the game before. I don't think it wasn't up to standards, and it wasn't up to Daryl Sutter's standards. But yes, maybe not the first period you wanted. Second period, you know, it wasn't the worst period of hockey they've played this year. They couldn't capitalize. And again, I keep going back to talking about Mike Smith and giving him a little bit of credit. And anyways, fast forward to Toronto. They picked up and kind of started, they imposed their will on the Toronto Maple Leafs is what I liked. They made Toronto play trying to keep up with them. I think that's the way you have to go about your games these days in the NHL. Like, you can't sit back and wait for teams to see what they're going to do and then react. I think it's kind of proven true throughout history. The teams that are more assertive and more aggressive, you know, try to make the other teams keep up with you. And the Calgary Flames have done a nice job of that under Daryl Sutter, but they lost focus of that for a couple periods against the Oilers. So glad to see it back on Friday.
How tough is that to do, to impose your will, I guess, on those teams when you see the superstars on the other side, whether it's McDavid and Draisaitl or it's Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander? How hard is it to not get too focused on what they can do and kind of lose sight of what you can do?
It's not easy, especially when you talk about Connor McDavid and Draisaitl, because they're two of the best. Yes, Matthews and those guys are Marner, they are effective, they're good goal scorers, but they don't quite possess the speed and strength, I think, that the other two do when it comes to the Oilers. So I think the Oilers have kind of that larger just individual threat. I think the Leafs as a whole, overall, as a full team, pose more of a threat from having a little more depth throughout their lineup. Again, Calgary was prepared for Toronto the very first game. And when it comes to imposing your will on teams, it requires a lot of effort. And I think Daryl Sutter's style of hockey that he's trying to get the Flames to play, it requires extreme effort. It requires physicality. It requires pressure all over the ice. And moving into Saturday night's game, I don't think the Flames did a good job of being prepared to go and do those things. And it's not easy on a night in and night out basis. It's not easy especially in a back-to-back situation. So I think that's where the offense ran dry for the Calgary Flames on Saturday, was just not being able to retrieve the pucks that they were putting deep, not having the jump, not making the other teams react. They still tried to do the right things, but there was something missing. And I think Daryl's style of hockey is going to be a big mental and physical adjustment for the Calgary Flames.
Looking at life under Daryl, we've seen some players get a bit of a boost in minutes. Tanev and Hanifin, and I guess Brett Ritchie as well, have certainly seen the largest of jumps. And with that, it means less ice time for others. And one of the players who's seeing that is Juuso Välimäki. His minutes down in the Daryl Sutter era. I'm just wondering if you've noticed anything in Välimäki's game that needs to be tightened up or maybe changed to fit under Daryl Sutter here?
Well, I think the biggest thing for Välimäki will be improving the defense first. I think we've talked about him a lot this year in having offensive upside, but he missed a lot of time. He missed a lot of action the last couple of years. So trying to shore up his defensive game, I think, is going to be probably at the top of Darryl's priority list. And if we look at this past game, the first goal scored by Jason Spezza, I know it's a tough shot from that angle, but it's a great shot. But the fact that he's got time to set up and shoot, well, Yusuf Alamaki gets pulled out high on that play, and then instead of resetting and having a look to see what's below him, he gets caught trying to do the right thing and help his forwards get the puck out. But that's not your place there. He has no business being that high near the blue line and losing track of two players below him. Kind of leaves Nesterov on his own, who's not able to do much, stuck in front of the net, and it's a goal against. He's on for the second goal against in this game as well. I'm not pointing fingers at Valimaki. Him and Rasmus Sanderson got a little mixed up on the 2-on-2 or quick 3-on-2 against. So it's little things like that, the communication, the reads that he's making, especially the play low around his net and not getting pulled away from there and not puck watching. That'll be first and foremost. But I took a look at his ice time. There's four games where he's had 12 or 13 minutes under Darryl. There's been one where he's at 19, another where he's had 16. So that averages out to about 14 minutes and 15 seconds over the course of these games. That's still a great number for it to be able to get into a rhythm for a young guy. It still allows you to feel like you're part of the game, but it takes off maybe a little bit of responsibility. And I noticed that Darryl's been playing him a lot against the other team's third and fourth lines. Well, this is a place to shore up your defensive game. You're not going to face the McDavids, the Marners. So I think that'll be the biggest cue in him growing in Darryl's favor.
Chatting with Corey Sarich here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. He's Will Nolte.
Corey, on the same note, you know, talking about ice time, Peter asked you about Valimaki. You know, the young player, Dylan Dubé, going to play career game number 100 tonight. Saturday night, saw just over 6 minutes in ice time. He was sat down after a couple of mental mistakes, and Darryl Sutter sit him down. They had a conversation, according to both sides, and they know they can be better. Darryl also indicated that, you know, it's been a stretch of some really good hockey for Dylan Dubé, and hoping Saturday is not one that, you know, now puts him in a different direction. And in fine Darryl fashion, you know, guys like Craig Conroy and Jerome McGinley, who have played for him in the past, have talked about this. You get benched, Dylan Dubé only 6 and change on Saturday, and tonight he walks into the locker room, he looks at the whiteboard, and sees he's back in his same spot with Lindholm and Tkachuk. We talk a lot about confidence, Corey. What does that do for a player who, okay, self-admittedly, you probably know you weren't very good on Saturday, and now you come back to the rink and your coach is giving you another shot to try and kind of redeem yourself and prove that you belong back in that spot? That's pretty important, and I think pretty poignant for a young player too, and tells you kind of what Darryl does and how he knows how to push those buttons.
Yeah, it's definitely going to send a message, and I'm a big believer in working through your adversity and playing through some of your mistakes. There is a fine line, I think, with that as well. As a player, if your play is not where it needs to be and trending downwards for a long period of time, like if you haven't figured it out, it's different. Maybe you deserve a benching. If your play has not been up to snuff for throughout good large chunks of your career, well, maybe you're not figuring it out. But that's not the case with Dylan Dubé. He's a fresh face in this league. I felt like just recently I've been paying him a lot of compliments. He's had poise with the puck. He's made good plays. He's known when to make offensive plays, when not to throw the puck away. I think he's been one of the best players, one of the best Flames. When he gets the puck low in the zone, rather than throwing hope plays in the offensive zone, he's a guy that does a nice job of hanging on to the puck. And he'll look to move the puck around the net, still waiting, hoping that something will open up. So his poise with the puck has come for me. He has a physical presence, and he's got to keep that in his game. So Darryl sitting him down and having a chat, it's just trying to right the ship right away, rather than letting it go on for a game. When it turns into a disaster, then maybe it turns into two games. Darryl's sending a message here. He's saying, hey, you weren't ready. Get ready tonight. Go do your thing. You pick up where you left off a couple games ago, and I think that's a way that a player can grow. You don't want people just to put Band-Aids on your play when it's not going the right way. Be direct, and that's what Darryl is. Let a guy know, but again, give him a chance and let him play through it. I don't know where you stand, Will. I don't know if you have the patience for that, but I think you have to let the players that you're going to put the load on and shoulder the load for a team going forward and are the future of your club, kind of like a Valimaki. They've got to get some experience, and the only way to do that is playing.
Yeah, and I think on the flip side of that is if you continuously sit them down, you're not really going to accomplish much, I don't think. You have to have some room for some of those hard lessons, and that's a hard line to walk or balance in pro sports, Corey, because the owners and the people with the money want the results, but you also, as I say, if you sit them down, you're never going to gain any ground. So it's a tough act to kind of balance and walk that line too, right?
Yeah, and if you're that's why I guess coaches get paid. They're the ones that should know how to manage people. They've had enough experience at it, and we know that Darryl is well versed in that. He's had all different types of players. He's had success. I'm sure that maybe there's every coach probably has a certain style of player that they are easier to relate to, and I think Dylan Dubé can be like a type of player that Darryl Sutter gets the most out of. He's a guy I think that can be pushed. He's a guy I think that also has the offensive ability that you can let him go at times. So it's tricky. I think if you're kind of reviewing where you sit with a player as a coach, and Lord knows I've never coached anything but minor hockey, but if you're constantly having to talk to, remind, if you have situations like the current one right now, and then you're having to do it again week after week after week, well, then you've got a problem. But things like this should take an effect and should have an impact, and I think Dylan Dubé is smart enough to figure it out.
Usually about 2.7 on the season in terms of goals per game that the Flames have scored. It's been about 2.6 under Darryl Sutter. We know the style of game that he coaches, Corey, but is this a Flames team that needs to find a way to generate more offense? What are you seeing with them in the offensive zone? And for a group that looks and sees 24 games left on their schedule, looks at the standings and sees how hard this is going to be in terms of a climb back into it, what are you seeing offensively? How does this team generate more goals? What are they not doing enough of right now?
Well, I think within Darryl's structure, you shouldn't require as many goals. If you can apply yourself defensively and if you can pressure all over the ice and be, like I was just saying, the people that are pushing the play, that's mistakes from the other team that you can capitalize on. That's being in position to turn pucks over in different places of the ice to help you go on offense. We've seen a lot lately with the Calgary Flames of putting pucks deep. And as I was trying to explain earlier, I don't think I did a very good job of it. To put pucks deep, there's got to be someone to go get them, right? And maybe the knock is on a line like Goudreau, Monahan, Richie. Maybe there's only one guy to go get the puck. Maybe Monahan's trying. We know that Goudreau has had a history of not being able to get in there and get pucks in a situation like that. I think the Flames have demonstrated that they can do it, but it takes three guys on a line. It takes everybody doing the same thing. And I think that was the biggest thing missing against the Flames or against the Leafs the other night was when they put pucks into places to go retrieve them and get their offense started, or they took pucks deep into the zone, someone was missing. I felt like there was one out of the five-man unit, one person on a line that just kind of was out of sync all night for the Calgary Flames, which resulted in like zero chances against. I don't know how to create offense, obviously being a defenseman, but I'm looking at their last six games and they've done not a bad job of it, and it's come off of forcing the other team into mistakes. But if you're not going to work and you're not going to apply that pressure, back pressure, forecheck, defenseman having the ability to pinch in the offensive zone, well, then you're kind of rendered useless. So for me, they got stuck in between, and it's going to be a grind. I really think it's going to be a grind for these players to commit to what what and how Darryl wants him to play. And that's the looming question for me is, like, do they have the mental fortitude to go and do it?
That's bad. Bad radio host play by me. I shouldn't ask a guy with career highs of 5 goals and 20 points to generate offense. So
yeah, what are you doing, Will?
Yeah, I'm setting you up to fail. That's my bad. I'm going to ask you another offensive question though to finish things off from me. Not sure if Pete's got a couple more for you, but on the other side tonight, the Flames are going to go Jacob Markstrom, and the Ottawa Senators are starting a rookie goaltender. He's making his NHL debut this evening. And I just had, you know, a question. Philip Gustafson is the young man in net for Ottawa this evening. As a player, you know that especially a high-profile position like that as a goalie, are you worrying about that at all? Do you care at all? Are you throwing everything at the net as a result? Like, does that at all affect the game plan as you're preparing for this game tonight?
Well, I would sure hope so. You see the fact that they've got a rookie goalie, there's going to be nerves, everything. I mean, I think back to my first game, which was against the Ottawa Senators, and it was like I was skating around in a dream, right? I had really no clue what I was doing. I was so jittery and nervous. It was weird. I know I had played quite a few AHL games that year, but it wasn't the same prep as that at this level. So if I see that tonight by the Calgary Flames, I am having heavy traffic around the net. I'm putting absolutely every puck I can on the net, because to be sharp in your first game as an NHLer, I think you do get fantastic performances from a lot of like top draftees and highly touted players. But for a lot of guys playing their first NHL game, it is unnerving and rattling, and I think that's what the Calgary Flames need to do to this goaltender tonight.
A couple more from me as we get ready for the Flames and the Sens tonight. Ottawa, this obviously is a building time for them. I believe they are 10 points back of the Flames for sixth. So there's some work to be done for Ottawa. Well, with that in mind, how important is a good start for the Flames tonight to kind of just put this team away and don't, for lack of a better phrase, I guess, don't give them hope in this hockey game tonight?
Critical, because I think if we look at the season series so far with Ottawa, these games have been all won in the matter of a period or the matter of just a span of minutes within a period where one team buries a couple goals and then the game is over. And it'll be interesting to see tonight too. We've had very high scoring affairs in all of these matches this year. I don't know what the goals average would be, but it's incredible between Ottawa and Calgary. So I'm sure that Darryl will not want to get involved in one of those games unless it's completely lopsided for the Calgary Flames. So I expect it to be a little different, but again, a young team, I think you have to go out. Ottawa has shown that they can be physical and they can get it throughout their lineup. I think that's actually an impressive part from me, watching these young guys from Ottawa, is how when they decide to turn it up in the physical department, they can. So I think Calgary has to go and just establish themselves all over the ice tonight, make this team know that they're in for one and break them mentally early, because I think that's the advantage the Flames have, is the experience. They do have more mental fortitude, but they don't want to give this young team any confidence early.
Last one. We as fans are looking at the standings closely. It has Will doing math. So obviously it has a lot of us very focused on things. In that locker room, is it a day-to-day looking at the scoreboard, looking at the standings, or how much does that kind of creep into the discussions in that room?
I think they're at the point where if you're realistically looking at it, you've got to win a high percentage of your games. So it's got to be focused on the game at hand. Excuse me. And that's where you go. But you have to assume that. Out of the last 24 games we've got here, or less than that, they've got to probably put a number up somewhere in the 600-700%, because I don't think if you don't win, or 60 to 70% of your games, if you don't win that, you're not getting in. Like, unless there's a complete implosion by the Canadians, they've won under Daryl Sutter so far. They've got a winning record, and they haven't hardly made up an inch of ground yet. So for me, I don't think you really need to look at what's going forward. It is, again, just approach it game by game, because you can't look at the schedule and say, oh, we need to win this batch, like against Ottawa, who they're supposed to win more than not against. That's out the window right now. It's just, you have to find a way to scratch and claw and win games, or you're not getting in. So for me, next game, get ready for it and go.
Corey, awesome as always, man. Thank you for this. We will break down tonight's game, and we chat again tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good, Peter. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, Will.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. There is Corey Sarich joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest
hotline. Remembered I was on the call, Corey. Thank you.
Now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza past the steaks and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. I was going to say, he said thank you to you right at the end. That was the closing remark. That must feel pretty good. Some vindication there, Will.
Well, you know, you have dinner with the guy before every Flames game the last 2 years, and now he just forgets you exist. It's fine. It's totally fine, but... yeah, I just, if he wants me to share his table in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge next time, better think twice, Corey.
Yeah, not getting your Coke Zero from now on, sir.
Right.
yeah, show him. All right, time for us to take a break. When we come back, do want to get more into this Flames-Ottawa Senators matchup as Calgary, this is getting into desperation time. We've talked about it a little bit. How important are these two games against the Sens? We'll break that down coming up next.
Your afternoon radio routine. This is the Big Show with Steinberg, Nault, and Klein. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Flames game day. Calgary getting set to take on the Ottawa Senators tonight. 4 o'clock warm-up means a much abbreviated edition of the Big Show here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. He is Will Nault. And Will, we said a split probably, I mean, obviously winning every game from here on out, probably best case scenario for the Flames, likely won't happen. So a split with the Leafs was really all we could ask for from the Flames. They get the job done. Saturday, not quite as aesthetically pleasing as Friday, but your, I guess, takeaways from the weekend that was for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I think, you know, Friday they really battled, got some great goaltending late to secure the 2 points. And I think the weekend is probably a great showing or a great tell as to where things are right now with this team. You know, Friday, I think there's a lot of people elated. They moved to 4-1 under Daryl Sutter. The playoffs look to be, you know, kind of right there within reach. And then you go back to action on Saturday. You get next to nothing going for you offensively. You lose the game 2-0, and it felt like the sky was going to fall and that everything in terms of all that wind had been, you know, essentially stopped, and this team grabbed no momentum going forward. And again, these games still have to be played. We'll wait and see what happens. But now that you're kind of in a must-win scenario to close out this road trip, I believe – against a team you've not had a ton of success against this season, I would argue have had the most difficulty against this season. That doesn't lead me to believe that they're going to come home with 6 of 8 points. But again, this is why they play the games. But I think it just shows you where things are at right now. Pete, you go from the cloud nine feeling on Friday to essentially the bottom of the well, or feeling like there is no hope on Saturday after a 2-0 loss. So it shows you where the Flames are, and the fact that 24 games left, yeah, they're probably looking at a minimum, and I'm talking minimum 15 wins, more likely 16, 17 wins to be in that playoff conversation. And for a team with just 2 3-game win streaks all year, yeah, the math tells me it's really not on your side at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this weekend kind of showed, the last couple of weekends have showed kind of the yin and the yang for just playing division games. Because on the one hand, to your point from a while ago, you're playing the teams in front of you. I mean, the Flames have almost literally everyone in front of them right now. So you're playing the teams ahead of you quite a bit, and that gives you ample opportunity to jump up. The problem is those teams are also playing each other, and Montreal apparently is just going to overtime every night now. That is just how the Montreal Canadiens are playing hockey. So even when you play close with the Toronto Maple Leafs, at least scoreboard-wise close, it's tough to come away from a moral victory because you have Vancouver and Montreal each coming away with points and then more teams in front of you getting points as well. Like I feel like these three-point games and seeing specifically Montreal going to overtime all the time is just so backbreaking when you look at trying to make up any ground in the standings.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's, you know, two sides of the conversation. It's easy to make up ground because you're playing everybody, but as you say, those teams are also playing one another. And when you have the overtime or loser point, as it were, it's going to complicate and cloud things even further. And you saw that on the weekend. And yeah, again, for me, it's just the way the weekend played out, it wasn't really all that forgiving or kind to the Calgary Flames.
Yeah. And I think another example to what you're talking about, where we're at with this Flames team right now, I think it kind of shows up this weekend where to me, I said this with Lou and you earlier, to me, the effort question is slowly fading away. We saw one outing against Edmonton where I didn't love it. But aside from that, I've liked the buy-in and the effort and the all those forecheck, tough hockey type of things that we were hoping to see. And now we're getting down to the, is this team just good enough? And against Ottawa, they definitely should be. Against a couple of the other, like against Vancouver, I would say yes. Against Montreal, yeah, but against Toronto, definitely not. Like the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think it is very clear, regardless of the effort or anything that the Flames are putting forward, Toronto's just a better hockey team. And that's, I think for me, I have graduated from, let's just see a consistent effort with this Flames team, because we've seen it in 5 out of 6 games now. I've graduated from that to now being able to answer the question, just how good is this Calgary Flames team? Even when the buy-in is there, how good can this team be? And that's, it's on the one hand, from an evaluation standpoint, it's exciting to get past the effort thing. But on the other hand, it's asking some tough questions now as you go up against a pretty talented division.
Yeah. And again, I know the first two games that, you know, Jeff Ward was removed as the coach, Darryl wasn't on the bench. But for me, that's, it's such a small sample. So it's probably a bit of confirmation bias too, in terms of, I really want to jump to that conclusion and get there. But yeah, I think the 8 games since removing Jeff Ward, is Daryl Sutter an upgrade on Jeff Ward? 1,000%. Every day of the week, yes, he is. But for me, it just boils down to that bigger question that seemingly we don't want to answer in this market, and that's, is it really the coach? Is that really what is holding this team back right now? And I think, again, it's only been through, you know, 6 and 8 games, I guess, 6 with Daryl behind the bench, 8 total. But they're back to right where they were when they fired Jeff Ward. So I just, the more I see this kind of playing itself out, the more I look at the remaining schedule, yeah, I just keep coming back to the players and the fact that this just might, at the end of the day, might not be the right mix. And it's really hard to hear, and you might yell at your radio when you hear me say it. But the bottom line is, they're just not good enough. They're not. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's something we're going to see fixed immediately. It's not going to be something we see fixed overnight. And I don't see, you know, really this team kind of changing, being in the middle of that pack outside of the hot 10-game stretch or 11-game stretch where they squeak into the playoffs as the 6th or 7th seed. You know, for the most part, this team remains that bubble team. And I just, you know, I'm stressing for major changes because I don't know how you get out of that cycle unless you make that move. And, you know, it's really tough to sit there and admit it. And they might not be at that point yet internally. And I fully understand that. It's not my money that they're spending right now. Because if it were, right, they would not be a team that's spending the cap. They, in fact, would be, you know, kind of, it'd be sad how little these players are getting paid. But that's kind of how I come down on it, Klein. Is Daryl Sutter an improvement? Is he going to get more out of this group? Yes. But at the end of the day, is that going to be enough? I have a hard time sitting here and saying yes. I really do.
Yeah. No, and that is fair. And for me, when we were looking at evaluating this team, the frustrating part before was that I wasn't even seeing enough of the buy-in to see if these guys were good enough. And I mean, maybe that answers your question there, if they're not getting the buy-in. But now that we are seeing it, at least we can get I think a proper representation of the talent on this team and make the evaluations like that going forward. But no, I am certainly more on your side than not about where this team is at in terms of their development right now. But the fact of the matter is, this is an organization that is certainly planning on making a run to the Stanley Cup playoffs and then probably would like to go beyond that. But if they are going to have any aspirations of that, it has to come tonight. This is not a night, Will, where I am looking for moral victories. I am not looking at, well, they played really, really hard, but gosh golly gee, they ran into a hot goalie. You're facing a goalie who's playing his first career game. You are taking on an Ottawa Senators team that is in the basement of your division. There is no such thing as moral victory tonight. You have to win these next two games for us to even consider taking you seriously.
Yeah, going into the trip, we'd said 3 wins out of 4. And again, the math on the out-of-town scoreboard would lead you to believe that that's even more true than perhaps when the trip started. But yeah, you've got to win these two games in Ottawa. I think going into the trip, we had looked and said, okay, Toronto, clearly the best team in the division. Can you get a split there? And then can you get the sweep in Ottawa? It's not going to be easy, but as you mentioned, you're playing a rookie goaltender. We talked about it with Lou. We even talked about it last segment with Corey. You look at the 5 games Calgary's played against Ottawa this season, and any of the games where they've kept it close, and I'm talking about the Sens, where they've been able to keep it a 1 or 2 goal game until the midway point of the game or even the end of the second period, that's when Calgary's had the most trouble. The 2 games where they've blown Ottawa out, it's been over early. Some of that was some bad Matt Murray play, but other than that is your start. And for me, that's how I look at tonight. The Calgary Flames cannot let this Ottawa team stick around because for whatever reason, for Calgary, when they allow that to happen, Ottawa takes over. And I think it goes back to the work ethic and the effort. And I'm not trying to call out the Calgary Flames players for the second half of those games, but that's how I see it. I mean, anytime a game is close, you look at this division. Calgary's got more skill than Ottawa, and that's probably it. You know, I think they're maybe even par with the likes of Vancouver, Montreal. But outside of that, they don't have more skill than Winnipeg, don't have more skill than Edmonton, don't have more skill than Toronto. So they've got to outwork those teams. Ottawa's going to do that to everybody. And they've had success against Calgary because – historically, we've seen this too. This Flames team plays down to their opposition, and they may look at it and say, hey, it's Ottawa. Look at what everyone's saying about them. Let's not really try too hard tonight. And it's bitten them in the ass more times than they would like to admit this season. So that's how I view it. They've got to get these 4 points before they come home, and they can't allow Ottawa to stick around, especially tonight with a rookie goaltender on the other side.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Ottawa Senators are just good enough that if you take them lightly, it's going to bite you. And they will beat you if you just look at the standings and play to that point total. Because this is a team, to your point, they work. And you look like there is talent on this team. Drake Batherson scored in basically every game ever. Brady Tkachuk, everyone knows how good he is. You don't get 25 texts about trading everyone on the roster for him if the kid sucked. So there are pieces on this team that you like. That being said, for sure beat them, because all you have to do is work hard and you're probably beating the Ottawa Senators tonight. So we will see how that all transpires. Again, it is a 4 o'clock warm-up, 5 o'clock puck drop. I keep saying it's an early one. It is not even close to being as early as the one that we have on Wednesday when the Flames play at 3. But it's relatively early tonight with a 5 o'clock start. I'm Peter Klein at home. Will Nault is at his home. And Logan Gordon is at the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. It's our 4th year with Iconic, so proud to have them on board as the studio sponsor. Diversity, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Will has come up with a massive revelation. We will get to that, and we'll probably allow him to make fun of my bracket as well. That as we continue on the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, Peter Klein. They are the big show, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Steinberg portion of that will join after 2 o'clock. Myself, Will Nault, with you right now. And before we dive into the other goings-on in the world of sports, let's go back to the weekend. It is now time for your Game in a Minute.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, home of the synthetic oil change starting at $79.95, any make or model. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome inside Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, where tonight, fresh off of a hard-fought 4-3 win last night, Mark Giordano and the 15-13-3 Calgary Flames will wrap up a two-game miniseries with Austin Matthews and the North Division co-leading 19-10-2 Toronto Maple Leafs. Canada will bounce it off Gaudreau's stick and right back in. Gaudreau steals it, fires it, and just misses Campbell's net. Muzzin keeps it in left point. Muzzin dispatches it with a shot. He scores! Here comes Dennis the Menace Hyman, or Zach the Dennis the Menace Hyman, whatever. He shoots, and he scores! But Muzzin holds it in left point, slides it across the hall. Hall with a shot off the post, and now Matthews has a goal stolen away by Backlund. Holy smokes! That's the Shane Holmes save of the game right there, and the goaltender didn't even make it. Flames hold the puck in. Here's Backlund, top of the far circle with a shot, stop, rebound, Tkachuk! Robbed by Campbell, who stacks the pads to make his best save of the game. That will do it. Jack Campbell with a 29-save shutout for the Maple Leafs, who split this two-game miniseries versus the Flames. Calgary won 4-3 last night. Toronto wins 2-0 tonight.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, home of the synthetic oil change starting at $79.95, any make or model. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
So there you go, your Game in a Minute, recapping a tough one for the Flames on Saturday. Before we go too far away from that, Will, there's apparently a goalie controversy out in Toronto now, as a lot of people in the Toronto media wondering if Jack Campbell has stolen the net from Frederik Andersen. I am a little bit surprised that it has got to this point with Freddie Andersen, who seemed like a locked-in number one goaltender with the Toronto Maple Leafs for a few years now. But it appears a goalie controversy out in the biggest media market in this country. Well, what do you make of this whole situation?
Yeah, and I don't know how much of Andersen's struggles this year have been some of the the lingering issues that he's dealing with in terms of the banged up or injury issues. Very minor, obviously. I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but the bottom line is you take the entire body of work over the last 100 games for Frederik Andersen. They talked about it on the broadcast on the weekend. It's below 900. And for a team that's waiting to take that next step, it's kind of similar to the conversations we've had the last 2-3 years in San Jose, is that team went to a Stanley Cup final and then was trying to get back there in the couple of years following. And Martin Jones just never was able to get back to that level. And for Freddie Andersen, when he came into Toronto, gave them that instant number one type of swagger, played 60 plus the first three seasons, was, well into number one type numbers with a 917, 918 save percentage, the goals against well below three. He looked like he was going to be that guy. And the last two seasons, it just hasn't been the same for him. And again, he's dealt with a ton of injuries, but that's not a good enough excuse. And I'm sure he would tell you the same. I think for Toronto, we talked about this a bit last week as we get set for that first game on Friday. This is a team that you look at it on paper, the way that they're constructed, you look at the division and how they've played this year. The path is there for the taking for them in terms of finally going and breaking through in the postseason and maybe getting that NHL Final Four and a Western Conference Final, depending, what else happens the rest of this year. But if you're wanting to take that step, it's kind of hard right now, I think, if you're Sheldon Keefe, to trust this guy. But maybe you give him some time off here to try and get right and see if you can, get back on track by the playoffs. But that's not an easy position to be in. And if Jack Campbell can do it in the short term, I think you're elated. But that's definitely the biggest issue when you look at Toronto and maybe what's going to hold them back come the playoffs this year. It's definitely goaltending. And Friday's game against the Leafs is kind of all you need to know. I didn't think Freddie Andersen was very good in that game at all.
No, I would agree. And it has to be so frustrating for Kyle Dubas, as you finally have the forward depth thing figured out. And it looks like with the addition of TJ Brody, that blue line is probably the best that they have had in this current era of Toronto Maple Leafs hockey. And now all of a sudden the goalie sucks. And it's like, how? How, like, this was supposed to be the thing that we had locked down, and now we get the other stuff figured out, and now this is happening? That has to be so frustrating from a Toronto Maple Leaf standpoint as they look to get into anything called a second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time in forever. Before we bring Steinberg on, you and I have both spent some time on the mornings and discussed food quite a bit on this radio station because of that. I do want you to be able to share some wisdom that you have acquired, as it seems, just judging from a picture I was tagged on Twitter here, that you may, if we were to do the chip bracket a little bit later, we may have a new number one contender in that, it seems.
Yeah, of course, if anybody did miss it this year, you know, when the world shut down a year ago, I was on the morning show at the time, and we quite frankly were looking for things to do. And the first thing we did was rank potato chips, and we decided to get listeners to vote on them. And I'm sure many listening know that Miss Vicky's salt and vinegar ended up being crowned the champion of the potato chip world amongst our listeners and our on-air personalities. And now a brand new chip has been released by Ms. Vicky's on their line, and it is the spicy dill pickle. I had to go to a couple of different stores this weekend to find it. You may have run into friends that have talked about it or found it themselves. It's a very good chip, Mr. Klein. I know there's many that are complaining. Maybe they could have left the spice out and just did a straight-up dill pickle chip. But I love the kick. I am here for it. These are damn good chips, and I would suggest that if we were to redo a chip bracket, that there might be a different outcome when all the voting is done, because this may have taken the top of my power rankings because they are phenomenal.
Interesting. I would be one of the ones who would be arguing for less of the kick. Your boy doesn't handle spice all that well, so I would be.
I was going to say you're not really a spice guy in general, though.
No, I am not. No, if it has the word spicy in it, there's a very real chance that I just avoid it.
So will you try these?
Absolutely not. Nope. Okay. I might, I'll probably like try one.
What about your wife? Where does your wife stand on the spice?
She is a very big spice fan.
So to maybe the point she where can she, buy the bag and you can have like one chip. Maybe that's how it works.
Yeah. She has told me that she is just like the term she uses is microdosing. She is putting more spice into things now, just trying to gradually build my tolerance up for it so that I can like the foods the way that she likes it. Because that's apparently this is happen. No, absolutely not. Apparently the other day, instead of microdosing, she macrodosed, and that.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was, it was too much too fast for me.
Old Pete didn't eat that night, or what happened there?
Oh no! Well, I mean, you know me. Old Pete never goes a night without eating, so Old Pete just dealt with it. But it was a little sweaty and uncomfortable. But that's generally how I live my life, anyway.
To those on the text line, I did find them at Superstore and Save On Foods. Anybody on the text line that was wondering, yeah, didn't find them at Sobeys, didn't find them at Co-op. But I found them at Save-On and Superstore. And I will leave you with this final note, Klein, because we are so random to end this this hour. It's perfect. But I know you nerd out over stuff like this. I just saw on my Twitter timeline the 6'6", 240-pound Kyle Pitts, tight end from the Florida Gators, at his pro day, just ran a 4.46 40. That is ridiculous and very spicy.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time? That is insane.
Kyle Pitts, tight end out of Florida, eligible for the draft next month in the NFL. 6'6", 240. He just ran a 4.46 40-yard dash. That is scary.
Yeah, that should be illegal.
He goes
should...
in the top five, yeah?
Yes, yeah. Certainly top 10, like absolute lock top 10. The only reason I would push against top five a little bit is people will trade up for quarterbacks and stuff like that. But he is a top five. Yeah. And he's a tight end, but he is a top five talent. I think Daniel Jeremiah said, if you had to bet on one guy in this class making it to the Hall of Fame, it would be him. I might be putting words in the guy's mouth, but yeah, this is a kid who looks like he is an absolute lock to be a stud. But we've said that about like 10 tight ends, so I wonder how high he goes fantasy football draft wise, because that's where my brain goes right away.
All about the fit, baby.
Yep, all about the fit for sure. And if he goes to the Giants, RIP his career. That's going to do it for hour one of the big show. Yeah, not seeing those texts defending Daniel Jones now. If you missed anything from the Calgary Flames, make sure you catch our Flames Roundup highlights twice a week hosted by Steinberg. They're on Facebook, they're on Twitter, and they're on sportsnet.ca/960. Brought to you by Brightside by ATB, a new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. We are going into a big stretch for the Calgary Flames as they get set to take on the Ottawa Senators. How would we grade out the weekend? Steinberg, Null, myself, Logo, discuss next.
All right, let's try the glass half full, glass half empty conversation this afternoon. So over the weekend, on one hand, Flames 4-2 under new head coach Daryl Sutter. They did some good things in their two-game set against Toronto. They took a split, which we said they could do if they take both games from Ottawa. We said they needed six in this four-game road trip. So far, they've got two with the possibility of six. On the other hand, Calgary definitely out of time for moral victories. Tough to talk about some of the good things they did on Saturday in a 2-0 loss, and specifically knowing how the playoff picture around them went over the weekend. But it's just the biggest observation I had coming away from the weekend. It was doing the Collins show Friday and Saturday. It's amazing how the tone of that overtime show turned in 24 hours. It was pretty positive on Friday. 4-3 win over the Leafs. 4-1 under Sutter. Things were feeling pretty good. At least that was the tone on the call-in show. Then they lose 2-0, and the tone was completely different. And completely different, not because there were different callers, like completely different even from, you know, some of our regular callers, all of our regular callers. It just turned in the snap of a finger. So that's the situation the Flames are in right now, guys. I get it. It's not even a criticism saying that the tone has shifted. That's not a criticism at all, because I get it. Each loss feels more detrimental than each win feels big or positive. So, Klein, glass half full over the weekend or glass half empty?
I am going to say half full, with the caveat that if they lose tonight, then the glass is broken and there's water everywhere. Because the weekend has turned these two games into must wins for the Flames. But what I was looking for going into the weekend was a response to a not great effort against the Edmonton Oilers. And while goaltending was certainly an issue for Toronto on Friday, I thought the Flames played pretty well. Saturday, but Friday, I thought they handled things quite well. And going up against a Leafs team, you knew going in that the Flames could play well and still lose. So to come out of that with a split is kind of what you are looking for. And I said this with Lou and Will in Hockey Central at noon. I am past the point now where I worry about the effort on a night-in, night-out basis. That certainly could come back with this Flames team. We've seen it before. But under Daryl, 83% of the time, I think I have that math right, the effort has been there for this Flames team. So to me, that part is gone, and I look at that as a positive. Now you look at the actual X's and O's and the hockey execution. The Flames are not better than the Toronto Maple Leafs at that, and so they lost. So I don't take too much negative away from the weekend. So Will, that was a long way of saying I am glass half full coming out of the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's probably the way you should take it. I know Pat's probably going to be a glass half full guy, just knowing, you know, he's a glass half full guy on life every day. So I know that that's probably where he's going to go. So just to be different,
not
guys,
the last couple days or so, but
I will say half empty. I mean, for me, yeah, it's been six games with Daryl. Have they played better? Sure. But for me, 4-3-1, he didn't coach the first two games, but they went 0-1-1. They're right back to where they were when they fired Jeff Ward. And we've talked a lot this season about having to take steps forward. And under Daryl, have they done that? Sure. But they haven't taken big enough steps, and they haven't done enough. And maybe that's too much to ask. But I think it goes back into saying maybe the coaching change was too little too late. But I said this to Pete last hour. Pat, and I'd be curious where you jump out on it from that conversation in terms of, yeah, it's only been the six games. They've played a little bit better. I'm with Pete. I'm not at the point where I'm really worried about the effort, but you're also at a point where you can't sit here and claim moral victories and be happy about that. And was the effort good Saturday? Sure, but they lost. And they're not at a point where they can sit here and say, hey, we played well Saturday, but we lost. The math is not in their favor. They've got a huge, huge road to climb. And for a team that's only put together two 3-win streaks all season long. That's a lot to ask for me. And so because I'm at the point where there's not a lot of moral victories at the end of the day, and they're back to where they were when they fired Jeff Ward, it's kind of hard to sit here and be glass half full, to be perfectly honest.
So by the way, I'll tell you mine in a second. By the way, the playoff chances that I look at, they dropped by 2% via the Athletics model and Dom Decision to 35% after Saturday. They dropped by 6.2% to 14.6 via Sports Club Stats. So neither model has the Flames with really solid playoff chances. They have the fifth best chances in both models in the North Division. I am glass half empty, trying to look on the bright side. How's that? Like I came away from the weekend. I think the Klein, everything you said is accurate. I liked a lot of what I saw from the Flames. I thought that their effort was strong. They're 4-2 under their new head coach, but you know, the math is starting to add up against him, Will, and that's where you come in. So I'm really trying to force myself to look at it balanced, because I see good things. I see the effort. I see the way they're playing defensively and away from the puck. They've taken significant steps in that regard. I think that they have played good hockey more often than not, and they got a split with the Toronto Maple Leafs. In what we thought this was going to go, if we went into this weekend thinking, or this four-game road trip thinking, that they need 6 of a possible 8. Well, they're on pace to get 6 of a possible 8, and so far I think the most likely script has played out halfway through. So all those things say, hey, you know what? The glass should be half full, but then they lose on the weekend, they get shut out, they don't generate a ton of high-quality chances in either game, and then 2 3-point games between Montreal and Vancouver, and all of a sudden you find yourself down 4 points out of a playoff spot despite the split. So I'm trying to look on the bright side. I really am. But yeah, the math is tough. The math is not in their favor right now, and that is their biggest uphill climb in the final 24 games of this season.
It really is. And again, I think, you know, you can have any kind of combination you want, but the matter of the fact is, if you do the math, you look at all the models that are out there right now, and Pat referred to two of them, but you look at the playoff odds and kind of where the math stacks up for the end of the year, 67 points puts you at the bottom of the playoff conversation. Now that could change, but for now, 67 points has got you kind of with about an 85 to 90% chance of making the postseason. So for Calgary to get to 67 points, they need 34 more. And that tells me that 24 games left, they've got to go 16-6-2 or 16, you know, somewhere in there with 16 wins. 68 points, you're looking at a 16-5-3 record. 69 points, you're now into 17 wins. So again, minimal to put yourself in the conversation. You've got to win 16 in your final 24. And for this team, you look at the remaining schedule. They play Vancouver 4 times, Edmonton 4 times, Winnipeg 4 times, Montreal 5 times, Ottawa 4 times, and Toronto 3 times. There is no real kind of empty space there. It's pretty spaced out. You got 14 at home, 10 on the road. So by the schedule, in terms of travel, you're probably in a pretty good spot with 14 of those 24 at home. But again, for a team that's only done it twice this season to have a win streak of more than 2 games, that's a really, really hard ask. And I go back to what I had just said, Pat, and that is under Daryl Sutter, you pretty much have to do what you did the last 6 games for the next, you know, times that by, you know, the remaining games. So you got 24
Well,
games
they've done
left.
It for 6, you've, so you need to do it
yeah,
4
so you
more
do it
times.
3 more times. You've got to win. Essentially, you've got to have wins of 4 of 6 for the next kind of three sets of 6.
Okay, let me quickly do the math, and I'm not using a calculator. 4 times 6, I'm confident on my multiplication table. 4 times 6 is 24. If they win 4 of 6 the rest of the way, like they have in Daryl's first 6, 4 of 6 the rest of the way would get them to 16 wins, which would get them on the bottom end of it. So that's kind of the minimum.
They've
got to
do what you just saw over the last 6 games under Dale. They've got to do that 4 more times. They've got to go 4-2 over their next 4-6-game series. And if you look at the schedule, it's really tough to find those 4-2 wins. They've got to work their arse off for them. It's certainly available. The math, they're not out of it. But again, for all the trends we've seen, it's really hard to be on that side and to look at it glass half full. But it's there. It's available. But it ain't going to be easy. That's for sure.
Yeah. Klein, no. Last word to you on this one. So Will, glass half empty, understandably. Klein, glass half full with good reasoning. Me, I'm kind of like, I'm cynically half full. I'm like, I'm trying to be half full, but I'm being pulled towards Will's side. Last word to you.
Well, none of this is going to matter because Montreal is going to overtime in every game that they play for the rest of the season now.
They
so
finally won an extra time game.
Right, yeah. But that is the downside of this. We talked about it a little bit in the one. The upside is, to Will's point, you play Montreal 5 more times the rest of the way. The downside is Montreal also plays other teams that are ahead of you. And these 3-point games in the division are just absolutely killing this team right now, where, to your guys' point, like, they've played well under Darryl, and they haven't moved an inch standings-wise. These 3-point games are really going to be a challenge for this Flames team, and an added wrinkle as this goes along.
Yep. Well, I know this much for sure. They need to win this game, and they need to win Wednesday afternoon's game. You have already lost 3 of 5 against Ottawa with just the one loser point in there. I know this. Like, and if you're listening right now and you're glass half full, that all the power to you, and I'm happy because we need glass half full people in this conversation. So I'm talking to you directly. If you're saying, no, we still got a chance, they're 4 points out, they can do this, in Darryl we trust. And I love it if that's the way you're feeling. If that is the way you're feeling, you need 4 of 4 against Ottawa this week. No questions asked. You've got 3 against a good Winnipeg team starting on Friday. You know, to get 6 of 6 against Winnipeg would be incredible. It's probably not happening. 4 of 4 against Ottawa is feasible. They're the worst team in the division. They've won 10 times this year. You need to do that, though. You cannot continue to be up and down and kicking the can around against the Senators. So we'll see if they can do that tonight. 5 o'clock faceoff from Canadian Tire Center in our nation's capital. Hour 2 of a mini edition of The Big Show underway with Klein and Will and Logo. I'm Pat. We're live in the Iconic studio this afternoon, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Telecommunications, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. 5 o'clock faceoff from a television standpoint. I think this is the first time all year they're on the companion channel. Sportsnet Flames is where you'll find this game tonight, because Montreal Edmonton is on West. And of course, you never have to worry about where you're going to get it on the radio. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. It'll be Jacob Markstrom and Philip Gustafson as your goaltending matchup tonight. First career NHL start for Gustafson. The Senators got him in the Derek Brassard trade with Pittsburgh. He played last week in a shootout loss to Vancouver. Did not allow a goal in 45 minutes of action. They did lose in the shootout, but this is his first career NHL start. Markstrom back in after Riddick started on Saturday. Flames not making any changes to their lineup from Saturday's game. Dylan Dubé comes right back in, not back in, but goes right back on that line with Lindholm and Tkachuk after only seeing 3 shifts in the final 40 minutes. Levo only saw 2 shifts in the final 40, and he remains in as well. No changes on the blue line. Game day brought to you by our friends at South Point Toyota. Where do you want to go, guys? Will, I'll give you the choice. You want to talk Dubé? You want to talk, because we've only got time for one more chat this segment. Dubé, you want to talk about the goaltending for Ottawa? You want to talk about the even strength scoring issues for Calgary? Which way you want to go?
Well, I think even strength scoring is, I mean, we talk about the goalies every day, so that's, you know, that's enough for me. But I look at this team right now, and I think a lot of attention, rightly so, is focused in on Gaudreau, but you look at all the core guys up front, and outside of Elias Lindholm, really the production has been just absolutely not good enough.
Been dismal.
Even strength. Since February 13th. 19 games in that span. Gaudreau's got 4 points. They're all assists. Monahan's got 2 goals and 4 points. Lindholm's got 4 goals and 10 points in 19 games. Backlund's got 3 goals and 6 points, and Tkachuk has 2 goals and 9 points in 19 games. So in those 19 games from those 5 guys, and I know that it's maybe unfair to just single out those 5 guys, but Monahan, Gaudreau, Lindholm, Backlund, Tkachuk combined in the last 19 games at even strength, they've got 11 goals. Not good enough. I don't know, you know, for me, I don't really don't have to score as much in Darryl's system, Pat, but that's at the end of the day, when I look at this team, that is for me their biggest issue. Always has been. They don't get enough done 5-on-5, and they don't get to those hard areas. And I think that's the one place that maybe Darryl's trying to change, is trying to drive that they need to get to that home plate area, especially in the offensive zone. But you look at the two things this year. Gaudreau's last run of 19 games has not been good. But overall, and you were the one who opened my eyes to this a little bit earlier today, and then I went and did the digging. But like Sean Monahan's had an awful year. And to the point where I don't know what you do with this guy or what the trade market looks like. And we're all screaming on the text line to trade him and that he's dead weight and all this stuff. Well, if you're saying that on the text line, what do you think pro scouts and pro GMs are saying? And as you had pointed out many times before, Mr. Steinberg, so accurately, if you don't think that he's not had his name out there in trade conversations before, you're lying to yourself. But I just look at that and I see, again, for me, you go to Darryl's comments about firepower. You go to kind of anything about goal scoring with this team. And that's just it. They might have even talent with Montreal, but the only team for me that Calgary's more talented on paper in this division is Ottawa. Everybody else, up for debate. And they certainly don't even hold a candle to Edmonton, Vancouver, and Toronto. And it's been very apparent for really this entire season. And you want to go all the way back to the start of the 1920 season. It's 100 games at even strength for Gaudreau and Monahan. Gaudreau's got 17 goals at even strength in 102 games. And Monahan's got 17 goals in 100 games. Not good enough. And they are two of your highest paid players. So at the end of the day, I think that's the bigger conversation, Pat. And that's why I kind of come back to it. It's only been 6 games under Darryl. But again, I understand he's an upgrade, but it's not a coaching issue for me. They're just not good enough.
Klein, the one thing that we know about Darryl, and we'll kind of, this will be a good way to wrap it up to get your thoughts on it. But the one thing that we know about how he wants this team to play, offense comes from, and this is in his mind, I'm paraphrasing what I've heard from him many times. Offense comes from playing well away from the puck, checking hard, limiting chances on the other side, and shot volume. And that is what he's looking for right now. And the big reason for that is he feels, and we've talked about this, no game breakers. To Will's point, they don't have the same type of talent that exists elsewhere in this division. So he is getting them to play very low event hockey that does not necessarily lend itself to high flying offense. Like, this is a team that's going to be winning. If they're going to win the 4 of 6 they need to be a playoff team down the road and down the stretch here, they're going to need to be winning a lot of 3-1, 3-2 type hockey games.
Yeah, and even 2-1, 1-0 type hockey games. That is going to be the key to success for this team. And I believe that the phrase that I've heard is, you check for your chances. If you want to be that team that is able to rush up the ice, you have to take care of things in your own end to get the puck going that way. And we have seen that can be a struggle at times for this group. And to me, at the beginning part of the season, the 5-on-5 was a struggle, but at least the power play was doing something. Now the power play has stalled to the point where they're experimenting mid-game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. But like, both of those can't be true. You can't be having issues 5-on-5 and on the power play, because then you're just having issues. And that is where this team is at right now. And to your guys' point, when you are behind on the firepower rankings against some of these teams, you need a power play goal, or I mean, if you're feeling crazy too, to really kind of offset some of that stuff, because 5-on-5, it isn't happening right now. And just anything offensively has been an absolute grind for this team for the most part, unless you have a goalie who's having some struggles like they did on Friday. So there's just too much not going the right way offensively for this team right now, whether it's 5-on-5 or on special teams.
They need these 2 points against Ottawa. They need these 4 points against Ottawa. The door is still open for them to stay in this playoff race right near till the very end, and the door is still open for them to sneak in. That is not slammed shut yet. If they don't get the points they need against Ottawa, it becomes a little less, it gets a little more difficult to be super optimistic about it. But the door is still open, and they've still won 4 of 6 under Daryl Sutter. That is a good start. I know that the tone changed a little bit after how everything went, not just the game on Saturday, but everything surrounding it went. But the door is still open. Let's see if they can keep that door open as long as possible and maybe start to make some moves to walk through it. The latest ATB Brightside Flames Roundup is up on our Sportsnet 960 Twitter and Facebook, also up on sportsnet.ca/960. Highlights right to your device, twice a week on Mondays and Fridays, all brought to you by our friends at Brightside by ATB, a new banking app to help you spend and save for what you love. Let's keep this conversation going next. Derek Wills joins us on the Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable as we assess glasses. Half full, half empty, and what are we drinking anyway? That's next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app, this is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Their certified pre-owned spring sales event is on, with special incentives on 2017 to 2020 vehicles. Visit MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca.
Less than 90 minutes away from our Calgary Flames warm-up pregame show, and about 2.5 hours away from puck drop in Ottawa, Flames and Senators tonight. 1-1 weekend for the Flames, a win on Friday in Toronto, a 2-0 loss on Saturday. My name is Pat Steinberg, his name is Will Nault, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. I kicked off, or we kicked off, rather, the last segment with a conversation about glass half empty, glass half full after those two games in Toronto. So Mr. Wills, coming out of the weekend, a win and a loss, and they actually lose ground in the playoff race. Glass half full or glass half empty on Calgary?
Well, I'm glass half full guy, and I was glass half full going into the weekend. And going into this 4-game road trip to Ontario, I said, if they can win 3 of 4, that'd be great. I think the bare minimum they need is 5 out of 8 points. And for me, that was a split in Toronto against the Maple Leafs and then a sweep in Ottawa versus the Senators. So they got their split against what I think is the best team in the division. And now they have to start feeding on the bottom team in the division. When you look at the standings, fellas, how many points are between Calgary and Edmonton?
I believe
I'll answer my own question. Nine. Yeah,
nine right
nine,
now.
9 points. The Oilers are 7-0-0 against the Senators. The Flames are 2-2-1 versus the Senators. So the Oilers have 14 points. And the Flames have 9 or 5. 9-point gap there too. So really, the difference between where Edmonton is and where Calgary is in the standings is how the Oilers and the Flames have played head-to-head versus the Senators. The Oilers have feasted on them, and the Flames have struggled against them. You know, they have fewer points in the season series than the Senators do, and it's been a strange season series. 2 blowout wins, 2 blowout losses, and then a 4-3 shootout loss in the last game between the two teams. So I'm still glass half full. Flames didn't get very much help, got next to no help on the Envision Custom Renovations out of town scoreboard over the weekend, but they took care of their own business. And for me, they still control their own destiny because they've got so many head-to-head games coming up against the teams they're chasing in the North Division standings. And they've got to probably pass Montreal, I think, to get into a playoff spot with the way the Oilers have been playing and picking up points lately. So for me, you've got to win these two games against the Senators, and then it probably comes down to who picks up more points when you go head-to-head with the Canadiens and in the rest of that season series.
Yeah, for me, I'm glass half empty. It's kind of hard to be half full when you look at the fact that it's been 8 games since the removal of Jeff Ward, and they're, for me and for my money, they're back to kind of where they started on this journey of firing the coach. And you know, it's probably too small a sample. I fully understand that. But I just come back to the fact that, you know, after all, is Daryl a better coach than Jeff Ward? Sure. But is it a coaching issue with this team when it really boils down to it? It's not for me. And I don't think, you know, they're just, they continue to show me they're not good enough. And we laid the numbers out last hour about their, or last segment, sorry, about the numbers at even strength. I mean, it's been over a month since Johnny Gaudreau scored a goal at even strength. Sean Monahan's only got a couple of those all season long. You know, over the last 100 games dating back to the start of the 1920 season, Monahan and Gaudreau both have less than 20 goals at even strength. You know, these are two of your highest paid offensive stars. And Matthew Tkachuk is right there with him. He's got two even strength goals in his last 19 games. This team still does not score enough goals. And I think the philosophy change and the move to Daryl Sutter was a smart one and a poignant one by Brad Treliving, because this is a team that I think, you know, they're not good enough to score four or five goals a game. So how do they change their play and be better defensively? Well, you've got the right coach for that. So I totally get all of that. But I just, it's hard to be glass half full when eight games have passed and nothing has really changed. And quite frankly, for me, Pat, because eight games have passed, the math has become even worse for you. So it's really hard to sit here and be glass half full today.
I am, as I said last segment, I'm kind of like cynically glass half full because the door is still open. They are 4 points out of a playoff spot. And they still have head-to-head games with Montreal. They do, to an extent, control their own destiny. But then when you start to take a look at the math, it gives you a little bit of pause because they do need to win 4 of 6 from here on out. They've won 4 of 6 to start, and that needs to be the norm in the next 4 sets that they play in their final 24 games of the year. And that is a tall task. It's not an impossible task, but it's a tall one. The even strength scoring is worrisome. It's been 19 games since Johnny Gaudreau scored a 5-on-5 goal. Like these are worrisome trends. Now, I have seen the reason why I keep it glass half full, though, is for two reasons. Number one, I have seen positives in their team play in 6 games under Daryl Sutter, and they have been able to show us that they can play in that style and do so somewhat successfully. That's one. And number two, what you said earlier, Derek, we talked going in that, you know, they needed 6 of 8 on this 4-game road trip. Well, they still have that opportunity. But it's going to be really hard for me to stay glass half full if they don't take 4 of 4 from Ottawa. So that's kind of what my message was last segment. If you are still very optimistic and still glass half full, I'm talking to you because I love that you're glass half full. We need that. But the Flames need 4 of 4 against Ottawa. That's going to keep it glass half full going forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. With that said, it's not going to be easy. We're talking about a Senators team that started the season 2-12-1 in their first 15 games. They're 500 since then, 8-8-2 in their last 18 games. And they've been much better on home ice than they have been on the road, even though they got off to a tough start at Canadian Tire Center, 1-5-1 in their first 7, 5-1-2 in their last 8. So sweeping this 2-game miniseries in our nation's capital tonight and on Wednesday afternoon is not going to be an easy assignment for the Flames, but I'm with you, Pat. I'm not going to write them off if they don't pick up 4 points in the next 2 games, but I'll tell you this, my glass will go from being half full to half empty. They've got to find a way to win at least 3 of their final 4 games against the Senators, and then they're going to have to do really well for the remainder of their season series versus the Canadiens. And, you know, maybe they get a little help there. If you dig a little deeper, the Canadiens are going to be without their leading goal scorer and point producer, Tyler Toffoli, for at least the next 3 games. So you've got to hope you get a little bit of help, at least, on the Envision Custom Renovations Out of Town scoreboard. But first and foremost, you got to take care of your own business, and that starts tonight.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable with Derek, Pat, and Will. It is a 5 o'clock face-off, hence why we're doing this early today. Dylan Dubé right back on a line with Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk tonight. He was essentially benched in the final 40 minutes on Saturday. Any surprise that he's right back with those guys to start tonight?
Nope, and I suspect we're going to see a great response from Dylan Dubé because it feels like every time he's been benched for a shift, a period, a game, he's responded really well. And I just think that's in his character. You know, when he faces adversity, he almost always responds the right way. And he's, I think, been one of the better players since Daryl Sutter took over behind the bench. But I think you have to, and this is one of the big challenges of being a head coach, especially in this day and age, you have to handle each and every one of your players differently. What you can get away with doing to Dylan Dubé, and that's benching him for most of the final 40 minutes in Saturday's 2-0 loss to the Maple Leafs, I don't think you can get away with doing that to one of your star players, Johnny Gaudreau or Sean Monahan or Matthew Tkachuk or Elias Lindholm, name any player you want. You can do that with a young guy like Dubé. He's only 22 years old. Again, he's always responded to this type of thing in a positive way. And I think he's been one of their better players. And I think Daryl Sutter would probably agree with me if you asked him. He's got 8 points in the last nine.
He said as much this morning.
Yeah, so that for me was an opportunity for a veteran head coach to send a very clear message to one of his young players. I think an important part of the core for this team moving forward. So, no, I'm not surprised that he's back on the right side of that top line with Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk. And I think Dylan Dubé will give the Flames a good game tonight.
No, I don't think anyone should be surprised. You talk to anybody who's played for Daryl Sutter before, this is kind of his MO. You have a bad night, you staple your rear end of the bench, and the next night you're probably playing more than you had even hoped or wished for. So I'm not surprised by it. And I think, you know, Dylan Dubé will obviously try to make sure that Daryl feels confident or happy with his decision to give him that much ice two nights after playing just 6 minutes. But that's the way I look at it, guys, is for Daryl Sutter. He's a young player. He's a good teaching opportunity, did that. And now he's hoping to give the young man another chance and not bury or destroy his confidence by healthy scratching him or put him on the fourth line today when he walks in the rink. No, just understand he had a bad night and you don't have to sink your confidence. I'm giving you another chance and we'll see what Dubé does with it tonight.
Here's my, I'll be very quick on my theory on this, but here is, and I'm quite confident in my theory. I've run it by a couple of people today. I think that it's really not all that different than what you were talking about there, Derek. I think with Dylan Dubé, who is still a young player, there's an opportunity to be able to send those messages and get bad habits out of the game. And that message, I think, works with a 22-year-old in his second NHL season. I don't know, like, look, there's bad habits in Sean Monahan's game right now or Johnny Gaudreau's game right now. But I don't know if sending that message works the same way with a guy in their seventh or eighth NHL season, whereas a guy who's still very formative in his development, I think that message sinks in a little bit more. I think there's more of an opportunity to eliminate bad habits early on. And I think that's why, you know, there is a different standard. Look, that play that he got benched over wasn't even all on him. And he has played really, it was 8 points in eight games prior to the game on Saturday, and he'd been one of their best players. I'm completely with you. But there was a mistake made. It was one of the details mistakes, little things mistakes, not chipping the right way and not getting that puck past Muzzin, an opportunity in a game like that to say, okay, we need these bad habits. It's going to be for this game and this game only. We need the bad habits gone and back in with the message sent. I just don't know if you can do that as effectively with other players who are way, way further into their NHL career, because it's a whole lot more difficult to get those bad habits out of those players' games. That's my theory.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Pat. And I know Dylan Dubé is not a rookie anymore, but he's still a young player in his first full NHL season, so I think you can get away with it. And don't forget that early in their careers, almost all of the Flames' top players got sat in the press box for at least one game. It happened with Johnny Gaudreau. It happened with Sam Bennett. It happened with Matthew Tkachuk. So this is not out of left field for me. And I do think that Dubé is going to respond in the right way tonight. I'd be really surprised if he didn't have a really good game against the Senators. And he's been good against the Senators in his career. He's got 4 goals and 6 points in 7 games. And tonight, Dylan Dubé will play in his 100th career NHL game. So looking forward to seeing number 29. I think the key for him, guys, and I think you'd agree, when he's moving his feet, he's effective. When he's not, he's not.
Yep. Agree with that 100%. One of the best skaters on the team. All right, Mr. Wills, be well. We will see you down here in a few hours for Puck Drop. Thank you, my friend.
All right, we'll see you soon.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Their certified pre-owned spring sales event is on, with special incentives on 2017 to 2020 vehicles. Visit MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca.
Okay, special bonus from yesterday and a chance to play a glorious song for you coming up next on this date in Flames history. It'll all understand, or rather, you'll understand, and it'll all make sense when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames History starts now.
Today in Flames History, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers premium Alberta brewed craft beer across our province and at their hangar in the Curry Barracks off Crowchild Trail.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a little bit today because we're going to start. Today is March 22nd, but we're going to start yesterday, March 21st, because it would be a shame if we didn't play the audio and didn't celebrate it. Let's go back to yesterday in 1989.
Sabourin, his long shot on goal, save made by Fitzpatrick, clearing it off the glass but not out. Ottawa on the right wing boards to Poplitski, his shot, and the pad save made by Fitzpatrick. Ottawa tries to get it to McDonald behind the net. He does. McDonald scores! Randy McDonald has scored his 500th goal! A standing ovation in the sound of Randy is just dandy!
Well, I know it didn't happen today, this date in Flames history. It was, we're one day late on it. But you got a call like that from the Hall of Famer, you better play it. March 21st, 1989, Lanny McDonald became the 14th player in NHL history to score 500 goals. I thought that was worthy of playing today.
Certainly is worthy. That's when you, I will accept and allow this this cheating to happen.
Okay.
Adam, I'm not a guy that usually allows cheating in these type of games, but for this one, I will say no foul on the play.
Okay, thank goodness. It was actually a pretty significant day, March 21st, 89. So, Lanny scores his final regular season goal, 14th player in NHL history to score 500. That was awesome. Joe Nieuwendyk would score his 50th goal of the season for the second straight season. He'd finish with 51. He's still the only player in franchise history to record 50 goals in consecutive seasons. He also became the third player in league history to record 50 goals in each of his first two seasons. He joined Mike Bossy and Wayne Gretzky in that regard. And finally, Calgary set a new franchise record with their 49th win of the season that day, surpassed the prior high of 48 set during 86-87, and they'd finish the season with 54, which was a club record and still is a club record today. That all happened yesterday, March 21st in 1989. Let's skip ahead to this date in Flames history, March 22nd, 1984. Funny enough, we're still talking about Lanny. He set a team record, still stands today. Franchise mark for the two quickest goals scored by one player. He scored at 16:23 and 16:29 of the first period. Two goals, 6 seconds, still a franchise record today for quickest two goals by one player. On this date in 2001, Flames won their first game under new head coach Greg Gilbert, 3-1 over Philadelphia. Gilbert had taken over 8 days prior, but the team went 0-3-1 under their new head coach. He was the interim coach at the time.
Coach Paul.
He'd have that tag lifted at the end of the season. And Ron Sutter scored his first and only goal as a member of the Flames as part of that win. What did you say there, Will?
Well, I said coach bump, honestly.
The 0-3-1 coach bump, yeah. They got one tie in their first four games under Greg Gilbert.
Ties.
Rhett Warner scored his only career overtime winner this date in 2007. Had to get that in there for Rhett. He was the guy to score the overtime winner. Flames beat the Predators 3-2 in overtime. And finally, on an audio standpoint, I've got one birthday for you, but I needed to play this. We take you back 7 years ago today. It's rare that you get music on this date in Flames history. But on this date in 2014, the Flames and the Edmonton Oilers.
Out of the middle, he gets in close, backhander, he scores! The blue line with a wrist shot, deflected, he scores!
Saturday night at Rexall started out fine, but where did the puck end up going 8 times in your goal?
Bash up, scores!
G-O-A-L goal.
As they continue to pile it on.
You felt pretty cocky getting on the board first until Mark Giordano caused the bubble to burst on your goal.
And he scores!
G-O-A-L goal.
Mark Giordano!
Goal.
Off the iron and in. It's 1-1. Scores! Curtis, Lindgren scores. Lindgren, the shot, he scores.
Time after time you drafted first pick, but you let go of Glenn Cross and he got a hat trick on your goal line.
Curtis Lindgren,
good goal line.
His third goal of the night.
When your coach got splashed, he was mad, we could see, but oh, there's a shot from Camilleri in your goal line.
Scores!
Goal line.
Mike Camilleri again!
Goal line.
As he fires from the right circle.
Goal line.
Scores!
La, goal line.
He scores!
G-O-A-L, goal line.
Mark Giordano! Mike Camilleri! Matt Stajan! Paul Byron! Curtis Lindgren! Curtis Lindgren!
Kevin Wesker!
Curtis Lindgren! Scores!
Still love the Lou cameo on Kevin Westgarth. Yes, 8-1. Flames crushed the Oilers 7 years ago today at Rexall Place. That's where that song came from. And I thought, well, it's on this date in Flames history. Better put it in there. And finally, Ryan Pinder celebrating today, gentlemen. It is Mike Smith's birthday. Pinder is having a huge party for Smith. He was born in Kingston, Ontario, this date in 1982. Originally acquired from Arizona in June 2017, Smith would play 97 games with the Flames. He went 48-38-8 with a 2.68 goals against, 909 save percentage. Klein, are you invited to Pinder's Mike Smith birthday party?
Pinder keeps that very exclusive, so no, I have not been invited. I am not up to the par of a Mike Smith birthday party.
It's a very
I believe it's actually
affair.
Just him and Mike Smith in one of those eating bubbles at the Fish Creek Park. Yeah. So I believe that's actually
very romantic.
I think Brower's invited.
Pinder and Mike Smith celebrating Mike's 39th birthday today. Happy birthday. In all honesty, happy birthday to Mike Smith, the former Flames goaltender, this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery offers premium Alberta-brewed craft beer across our province and at their hangar in the Curry Barracks off Crowchild Trail.
We are exactly 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. What are we hearing around the league? The best in the business spilling all the tea from around the NHL. Coming up next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show talks hockey right now with NHL insider Elliot Friedman. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Lost your keys? Calgary Lock & Safe can rekey or recode your locks. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Final hour of the program because at 4 o'clock, it is Calgary Flames warm-up. Flames in Ottawa for a 5 o'clock puck drop this evening. Pat Steinberg and now our NHL insider. Elliot Friedman joins us in his regular spot on Monday afternoons. Happy Monday, Mr. Friedman. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Pat? Aside from the raccoon poop problem I have on my back deck here, I'm doing fantastic.
We don't have to deal, like, raccoons in Calgary aren't really a thing the same way they are in Toronto
really?
And Vancouver. Yeah, we don't have a lot of raccoons in this city.
I've never
seen one.
You've never seen a raccoon?
No, even like I've spent.
Do you live in a house or do you live in a condo or what?
I live in a condo. I'm 20 floors up. I've seen plenty of pigeons, for instance.
That's why you haven't seen a raccoon. So
that's I don't even know.
You're kind of disqualified.
I'll need our text line to back us up, but I don't think raccoons are a big thing in Calgary. I'm going to need to.
They are practically our overlords here in Toronto. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I see pictures from like Walker posts pictures of a raccoon on his deck all the time in Vancouver. So I know that there are issues elsewhere. I don't know if it. Well, we'll get confirmation on that at the end of the hit. I will make sure that I double back on that. Tell us about the trade deadline and what you're hearing. We're 3 weeks away today. How busy are things around the league, or are they not busy at all?
Look, I think there's a lot of talking going on. I just don't know that there's a lot of acting. You know, Vancouver and Columbus were two teams that were kind of working on some things or talking about some things, and they're back in the race, so I'm not so sure they're eager to do stuff. You know, Nashville's been a team we've talked about a lot. They got home after a long road trip last night. They finished it off with the shootout win in Dallas. I think they're going to make a couple of decisions. I think Nashville has an interesting decision to make. And it's, you know, like Ekholm, as we all know, has been out there. And I heard there's been some Ryan Ellis love. And I think they wouldn't do, like, there's a lot, not a lot of guys who have term on their contracts who are going to get traded right now. But I know there's some respect out there for the way Ryan Ellis plays. And, you know, he's got to get healthy first. But I kind of wonder if Nashville's looking at an Ekholm or an Ellis decision and kind of figuring out what way they want to go there. So I think there's a lot of talking. There's not a lot of action. But I think there's, you know, there's some more names starting to squeeze out. Maybe Connor Garland. You know, what's Toronto thinking? Do they have to act on the goaltending? You know, all of this stuff, I think they're kind of, the teams are kind of trying to squeeze it out.
Ooh, a lot to dive into there. And let's start with Nashville. I heard you and Merrick on the 31 Thoughts podcast, which is brand new today for the week. And you brought that same thing up, kind of an Ellis or Ekholm situation. Can you expand on that a little bit more and kind of the dilemma Nashville has right now?
Well, first of all, Pat, let me just say, first of all, I always appreciate your loyalty to the podcast. Thank you very much.
It's
you always listen.
Must listen every week.
And Jeff, no, I'm not looking for praise. I'm praising you. I say, Jeff and I thank you for your support.
You're welcome.
So just be quiet and take it. Okay.
Okay.
I got a call yesterday just to look into something, and, you know, I did. You know, when we reported initially that it was for Nashville, it was no Josi, it was no Rene, and no Ellis. You know, Josi, there, you know, obviously he's their MVP. You know, Rene, there's again, he talked about it last week. There's a real will for him to retire as a Predator, and I think they want that to happen. And then it was kind of like, you know, some people said to me, "Are you sure on Ellis?" Because I think there's some teams out there that really like Ellis. And I kind of wonder if one of those teams is kind of Philly, but that's just me sort of guessing. You know, I think that the thing about Ekholm is he's going to cost you a lot. He's a hell of a player, but he's going to cost you a lot, and he might cause you some expansion issues, and then you got to re-sign him in a year. I mean, the window to re-sign him opens this summer, but you've got to re-sign him in a year. And, you know, Ekholm took a very team-friendly contract in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I think what these teams are kind of wondering is, will he feel as loyal to the next team as he did this one after he gets traded? It's normal for, I think, a player to react this way. Okay, I'm not with my first team anymore. Let's see. And you don't really know the answer to that question. So I think teams are starting to think about, okay, we go get Ekholm. You know, we lose what we have to lose to get him. We may have to lose something else in the expansion draft to get him. And then, you know, are we going to be able to keep him? And Ellis has term. He's got 6 years left. You know, I think there's a little bit of worry about his health. He's been banged up here and there, but so is Ekholm. I just think Ellis is a heck of a player, and I think Nashville's kind of wondering, you know, if other teams are wondering, do they feel better about trading what they're going to need to trade when they know they have Ellis for term?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that that's kind of been thrown into Nashville's MO here.
Okay.
So I think that's a conversation that they're kind of talking about, and this is a big week for them because, like I said, they're back home and they're going to start to make some of their decisions.
We've heard different Canadian connections to Ekholm. We've heard Winnipeg has kind of been thrown around as a potential landing spot. Toronto has been thrown around as a potential landing spot. And maybe now Marc Bergevin in Montreal?
Well, like first of all, I think the thing that complicates all this is, you know, Columbus being in the race, what is this going to mean for David Savard?
Right.
And, you know, I don't think David Savard is going to be a long-term Blue Jacket. I think it's more likely than not that he's going to be playing somewhere else next year. You know, I could always be wrong. It's happened before. It'll happen again. But that's kind of my read on the tea leaves of the situation. So I think that makes Nashville's position better. You know, CJ and I disagree a little bit on Ekholm. He really feels Toronto's in. I don't get that impression as much. But, you know, the one thing I will concede to Chris is that if the goaltending is going to be a problem, it may change Toronto's focus. And so, and Montreal, like Bergevin says, no, but nobody believes him. Like, he's just, you know, he's a guy who's, he goes for things. And it's obviously a huge year for Montreal. And, you know, I think he, you know, would anybody be surprised if he goes for it? I think no. So I think it's Winnipeg. I think it's Toronto, potentially Toronto. Like I said, CJ and I differ. But I do concede if the goaltending becomes a problem, more of a problem, and they can't get a goalie, or they don't think that that's the right path, maybe they do look at D. I don't know. I hadn't heard that as much, but I'm conceding it. I think Montreal is there. I think, you know, I'm not convinced Philly's going to do it right now. I think if Philly in the summer, I think they might be more willing to do it, but not right now. And so that leaves Boston too. I think Boston is a team that's really interesting. And, you know, I also do wonder what St. Louis going to do. Like, they're really beaten up. And I kind of wonder if they might be thinking about something.
Okay. Elliot Friedman's with us. We're 3 weeks away from the trade deadline. Our Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada NHL insider joins us every Monday at this time. You mentioned the goaltending situation in Toronto. First of all, you kind of shot something down today on the podcast, and I hadn't heard these rumors until you shot them down, but there was a little bit of buzz about Jonathan Quick and the Maple Leafs?
Well, there were some rumors going around. There were some rumors going around about, you know, Quick and the Leafs. And I heard them on the weekend. I kind of looked into them, and I just don't see it. You know, I like Quick a lot. He's a really competitive guy. I think his personality would really fit. And he's got a good relationship with Jack Campbell. So I think there's a lot of circumstantial evidence there. But Quick is a guy whose, you know, body's been through a lot. He's 36 years old. And, you know, is it the smartest thing to try to bring him through a quarantine and sit him for 2 weeks and then try to work him back up and put him in big games? I just don't think that the Toronto believes that that's – I just don't believe that Toronto believes that's a smart play. You know, Toronto considered making a goaltending change in the offseason, but the one thing Dubas made very clear was we're only doing it if it's appreciably better. And so I look at that now, like I do think it's possible they looked at Arizona's guys, but Ranta gets hurt a lot and Kemper's hurt now. And, you know, are you bringing in someone, if your whole point is Anderson's hurt and struggling and Campbell gets hurt a lot because he's had a lot of injuries, are you going to bring in somebody else who has a history of being hurt?
Right.
So, to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So do I think Toronto's looking at it? Yes. Do I think they're doing it necessarily? No. It really has to make sense, I think, for them to do it.
Okay.
It really has to make sense. And we're talking about a guy who you think can last through a quarantine if you have – because Ottawa, you're not looking at their goal. Like, their goalies are all beaten up. Vancouver, do you think Holtby's an upgrade? Like, you know, let's say for argument's sake – you know, Calgary fell out of the playoff race. Do you think Riddick is better than what you have? You don't. So you're only making the deal if it's really better than what you've got and you think they can be healthy enough. And I don't think that's a big – and you can make the deal. Like, I don't know how many goaltenders are in that Venn – the middle part of that Venn diagram.
Right. Very true. And we saw Jack Campbell post the shutout against Calgary on Saturdays. Is this a situation where
it's
he
his
gets
time.
The ball?
He's just got to stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy and perform.
So it's his ball to run with for the next little bit, hey?
Yeah, because, you know, Anderson's hurt. Like, Keith said after the game that, that Anderson might not be ready to play Thursday. So, and I wonder if he's, with all the moves they're making, I wonder if he's going on IR too.
Okay. And speaking of the Maple Leafs and some of the salary cap juggling, they lose Tyler Boyd on waivers to Vancouver today. How is that something Toronto's pretty choked about, or were they expecting?
I don't think they liked it. I don't think they liked it. I think, you know, Simmons came back, so they had to create some room. And I think they're also fiddling around with their cap room to add. So I think they knew it was a risk. I don't think VC, I think they were prepared to lose. Boyd, I think they were prepared to lose, but they didn't like it. And I'm not surprised Vancouver made the claim. Boyd's been pretty good. He's been a good player for them.
for sure. And now Vancouver's adding, they're adding in the low cost area, no doubt about it. But there's a couple of guys they've claimed. And the Canucks are playing better. They've got themselves back into this playoff race. What are you hearing about their approach as the deadline gets closer?
Well, I think the thing with the Canucks is that, you know, the math isn't good for them. It just isn't. But they're got, like, so Saturday night I looked at their forwards. The 12 guys they played forward had 69 goals this year going into that game. Besser and Horvat had 28 of them. So you got 10 guys with 41, and then VC had 5 in Toronto. So you had 9 guys drafted with 36, and they scored 4 times and they lost in a shootout. And so they had a really strong road trip without their best player and really beaten up. And I think what they're saying is there's two things. Number one, you have to reward that. I understand that fans and media think differently, but your players think a certain way. And they don't want to feel that you're bailing on them when they're competing. Now, if you're bailing on them with a great trade that you just can't say no to, I think they understand that. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, if you're doing it just for, I don't know, a mid-round draft pick, you're saying you're not really helping yourself. Now, the other thing I think here, and this is a factor, you know, let's just say the Canucks do make a run here. Does it help them? Does it help rebound their economics out of the pandemic? I will tell you, I've had owners tell me before, just the difference in your renewals when you make the playoffs. And like I said, the math is not good for them. The odds are more likely they don't make it than make it. Mm-hmm. But if you don't think owners aren't looking at that right now and saying, you know, do we sell a few extra tickets? Do we do a few extra things because we're in the race? You're kidding yourself. And so I think put it this way. I think they've been taking calls on Hamonic, depending on what he wants to do. I think they've been taking some calls on Ben. He has a small no trade list. I think they've been taking calls on Pearson, obviously, before he got hurt. I think they've been taking calls on Sutter. And I think they're just sort of gauging the market. And I think they're still doing that, but I don't think they're going to act. Like, I think they're going to say, we're going to wait before we act just to see how this goes.
Okay. A couple more with Elliot Friedman. Why Connor Garland's name, when you brought that up Saturday and then talked about it again today, 25 years old, he's having a great year in Arizona. What is the motivation behind potentially him being on the block?
Well, I think there's a couple things there. Number one, you know, he's arbitration this year, arbitration next year, and then UFA. So he's making, I think, $775 this year. And then that number is really going to shoot up. Really going to shoot up. And I think Arizona's looking at it saying, okay. And secondly, you know, they need to restock. And I think there's teams out there that like him and they like his game. And will there ever be a better opportunity for them to use him to restock? I think the other thing too is Arizona is not a big team up front. And, you know, some of those guys are signed long-term, Keller, Schmaltz, them. And, you know, I don't think they're really in a hurry to trade Garland, but I think they look at it like, is it the smart thing to do? And, you know, if they get some assets, I think they'll consider it. Now, the one thing I understand, and I got a call about this yesterday, is that they're not crazy about, like, for example, because I think one of the teams that would kind of be around this would be Boston. It's from there.
Yep.
You know, you don't want, if you're trading with Boston and they're picking late in the first round, let's say you trade for a first and a second. It's all late picks, right? So I don't think they just want to add additional picks late in rounds. I think they want more than that.
Okay. Okay. Two more. One poignant one, and then we'll finish off on raccoons. But okay. just a thought on Thomas Hickey returning to the Islanders lineup. He's a Calgary boy. That was a pretty feel good story over the weekend.
It was, you know, I didn't even realize it either. You know, on Saturday night, those were huge games. The games we had, Calgary, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and then Edmonton, Winnipeg. So I was kind of locked in. I wasn't really paying attention. And someone sent me a note and just said, hey, you should watch this clip of Thomas Hickey. And I saw the clip that was, I think it was Isles' blog that put it on the internet from a Zoom call. And, you know, the Islanders were trying to trade Thomas Hickey before this season. They were trying to attach maybe a draft pick or a sweetener because, you know, they wanted to create some cap room in his situation. And, you know, he'd been through a lot, you know, two concussions at least. And as you know, being in Calgary, the tragedy in his family. And, you know, like nobody on that team has a bad thing to say about him as a person. Like he doesn't complain. He competes. He was in the American Hockey League a lot. And it was really a long, challenging road. And to see him come out and get a couple of assists in that win, you know, it was like there were Islanders fans. Like Islanders fans on the internet, they're really passionate. You know, like there's no team I hear. Like this year, I get, you know, a couple of people every time I drop the blog or the podcast, I don't talk about Florida. I get some Panthers fans saying, you can't ignore us this year. You have to talk about us. But I always get, like, the Islanders fans, whenever I drop something about them, I always get DMs saying, thank you for touching on the Islanders. We're listening for you to talk about the Islanders. Like, always, always, always. So they have really passionate fans, and it meant a lot for them to see Hickey get something good happen to him. And you're right. I mean, as a Calgary guy, you know him. It was a great story. I mean, everybody deserves, when you've been through what he's been through,
yep.
You deserve some good in your life, some enjoyment, some celebration. And I'm glad he got that. But boy, I tell you, I watched the clip. Did he look emotionally spent after that game, Pat? Oh, yep. My goodness.
Yeah, it was, you know, you have those moments every once in a while. There was the Bobby Ryan one in Ottawa last season. This one was pretty neat to see. So I wanted to make sure I got your thought on that before we wrapped up. And just to confirm, yes, the text line exploded. Very, 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 very few of our listeners who have been here a long time have ever seen a raccoon in Calgary. Apparently, they don't do well on the prairie winters. We've got an abundance of coyotes in this city. So like our urban wildlife, coyotes, bobcats, we got a ton of skunks, and obviously the vermin that are pigeons. That's what we have. No rats in Alberta and no raccoons.
Man, you guys are lucky. You guys are really lucky.
Cause I gotta be honest.
I gotta tell you another reason to move out there, except that if I did, I'd have to see my buddy Gary Davies more, and I don't want that.
Fair enough. And you might have to run into me or Boomer, and that's also definitely not something you want to do. I always like the show, the raccoons, and on the outside, they look like very cute animals, but I've heard that they're anything but.
No, they are, you do not want to deal with those things, man. You do not want, I can hear them on my roof at night. I can see the resemblance of what they've left. Like, I have learned more about how to clean raccoon poop than any human who isn't actually trained to do it should need to do.
Godspeed, my friend. We'll hear you Friday. We'll talk to you on Monday.
All right. Take care, Pat. Speak to you later, man.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Having issues with your automatic doors not working properly? Calgary Lock & Safe can help. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Logan Gordon up next. I don't know if we'll get any raccoon updates from Logo. But we will get the latest from around the sporting world on headlines next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity, home of the synthetic oil change, starting at just $79.95. Any make, any model. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, happy game day. It's Calgary and the Ottawa Senators and plenty happening elsewhere in the sporting world. Logo with headlines, let's go.
Who the hell are you?
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Good morning, Logan.
Logan.
All right, so now let's talk about what really struck me about Logan. He's older, he's weaker.
Can't Logan find better work?
I'm an idiot!
Apparently you're the idiot, Pat, because you didn't know there were raccoons everywhere.
There are very few raccoons in Calgary. That's what we said. It's very true. There are very few raccoons, and I want to say that like 90% of our text line said, I've never seen one. I've lived in this city for 37 years almost, and I've never seen a raccoon. So they are not as plentiful here in Calgary.
Hell, you just saw
your first
beaver last year.
Exactly. I've seen bobcats. I've seen coyotes, many coyotes. I've seen skunks. Never seen a raccoon. They are not as plentiful here as they are in Vancouver and Toronto. So the condescending, get your facts straight guy from the text line can straight beat it. Anyway, I'm an idiot. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning, Patrick. Another Flames game day, gentlemen. We're back in the nation's capital for another edition of Matthew versus Brady, Flames and Senators. Today's game brought to you by our friends at South Point Toyota. After being, we'll call it benched on Saturday against the Maple Leafs, Dylan Dubé was asked a lot during his morning availability today and was asked if the team is starting to get a good feel for how Darryl wants them to play and how the approach has been. Here's what he had to say on that front.
Yeah, it's been good. I think our play has been good. We've been harder. You know, I think we've come together more as a team and the work that we've been putting on the ice. It's been a lot more, you know, fun playing right now for us, for the compete guys have been bringing every night. So I think we're doing really well as a team for that.
Pat Dubé jumps right back into his regular spot alongside Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm after not seeing a whole lot of ice on Saturday. But the bigger picture for the Flames is we need to see them pick up some points in this two-game set against the Senators, and that starts tonight.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought Derek, I'm on board with Derek when he joined us about 45 minutes ago. He expects a, you know, pretty solid game from Dylan Dubé tonight. I do as well. He'd been really, really strong prior to the mistake made on Saturday night. A little bit of a message sent, and you can do that to younger players. I think he'll respond the right way. But, Will, the theme of the first couple hours of our mini program today has been glass half full or glass half empty on the Flames. Well, it's going to be tough to be banging the glass half full drum if they don't win tonight and if they don't take four of a possible four from the Ottawa Senators here.
Yeah, I think at this point it's kind of hard to look at it and say, you know, if they come home with anything less than four, it's really hard to be positive about that. Mm-hmm. They have come out of Toronto with a split. I think you look at this four-game road trip through Ontario on paper, that's kind of the way you would hope to start it. And then, you know, you're setting yourself up now for a chance to win two in a row. The only problem is they have not played very well against the Ottawa Senators this season. 2-2-1 through five games. Ottawa's had the best success against Calgary this season. Them and Montreal are the teams they seem to certainly have the best time with. And so it's on Calgary to be better. And bottom line, if they want to take those two steps forward, because for me, they're kind of back to where they were when they fired Jeff Ward. So if you want to continue to take those steps forward, well, you have to win these two games. You can't lose any points or you leave any points on the table against a team like Ottawa when, you know, the rest of your season you're having to play about 700 hockey and relying on, you know, quite a bit to help you. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, for me, Pete, it's kind of hard to look at it and say if they come home with anything less than four that it's a good thing. It's got to be four or bust for me.
Yeah, no more moral victories. No, they played hard. No, they ran into a hot goalie. You are playing the only team in this division that's behind you in the standings right now. You need to come away with this with four out of a possible 4 points. Absolute must-win territory for the Flames these next couple of games.
There is no such thing, Logo, as a moral victory the next two games. If you do not get 2 points, you can get... Philip Gustafson can make 67 stops tonight. He gets the start in net for Ottawa, his first NHL start. He can make 67 for a shutout, and the Flames could feel great about it. There's no moral victories. Not against the last place team in the division when your playoff scenario is as dire as Calgary's is.
We are under about half an hour away from Flames warm-up with Pat Steinberg from the Envision Custom Renovations Hot Stove Lounge leading up to a 5 p.m. puck drop between the Flames and Senators. Right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Two other North Division games in the NHL tonight as well, gentlemen. The Edmonton Oilers and Montreal Canadiens set to start a three-game set from Montreal, but the Habs going to be short a couple of bodies. Tyler Toffoli out for this three-game set. He's dealing with a lower body injury. And not too long ago, we got news that Joel Armia and Jesper Kotkaniemi are placed on the COVID list. So their status for tonight, probably not going to happen. We'll see about the rest of this series. The other game, Winnipeg and Vancouver. Of course, all the talk around the Canucks is how they added yet another former Maple Leaf off of waivers today. This time it's Travis Boyd after claiming Jimmy Vesey a few days earlier. Also on the schedule tonight, guys, Buffalo in New York to take on the Rangers. They're still in the midst of that 13-game slide. Other notable games tonight, Colorado, Arizona, Minnesota takes on Anaheim, St. Louis, and Vegas in Las Vegas tonight. Klein, where are you focusing in on this NHL schedule besides Calgary and Ottawa?
Well, obviously the North Division is going to get a lot of our attention, but I'm focusing on Philadelphia as they take on the Islanders. This is a Flyers team who I picked to basically sweep all of the awards and to go on to fall just short in the Stanley Cup Final. If they're going to do that, this is going to be one hell of a back half of the season for Philadelphia. They have struggled on the outside looking in the playoffs right now. It's gotten a little bit more bleak in Philly, Will, than I was expecting. So that's where my eyes are tonight on this NHL schedule.
Yeah, and for me, I'm kind of with you because I had them pegged very high. I had them as my Eastern Conference Stanley Cup finalist before the season even began, and now here we are. Yes, they are playing in the hardest division in the league. I fully believe that, but there's a lot of talk about Alain Vigneault and job security, and part of that is that market, Pat. I fully understand that, but Philadelphia is another team that I'm watching similar to Klein. What's that?
Is that a hard market?
No, their fans love everything. Yeah, they're great. But no, that's where I'm looking. And obviously, if you're a Flames fan, you're keeping a real close eye, and you might even dual screen Edmonton, Montreal this evening.
The Armia Kotkaniemi thing is interesting. For pretty much since JT Miller at the very beginning of the season, anybody who's gone on the COVID-19 reserve list or whatever we call it in the NHL, anybody who's gone on that list. In Canada, it's been very short term. It's been a false positive, or it's been under abundance of caution.
Sorry, 6 days earlier this month for Kyle Turris. He just got off last week, and one day, probably a false positive for Alexander Barbanov in Toronto. But that's the only two in the last month for the Canadian division.
So they've been very short lived. Will that trend continue for Montreal? Specifically on Kotkaniemi, that's one of their top two centers, especially with the struggles Philippe Danault has had this year. Suzuki and Kotkaniemi, young, but they're the top two centers. That would be a significant loss for Montreal if it's anything more than a day or two.
So that's your NHL sked tonight. Oilers and Habs going to be available to you on Sportsnet West at 5 o'clock as same time Flames and Senators get going over on Sportsnet. Flames will move to the NBA, where Peter Klein isn't going to enjoy this conversation.
The North
has been brutal of late. The good news going into this one, Klein, the team opposite of them has been doubly brutal. Between these two teams, in their last 20 combined games, they have combined for just one victory. The Raptors, an 8-game losing streak. Houston, a 20-game losing streak. When this streak started for Houston, they were actually 11-10 and above 500, but they've lost 20 in a row. Klein, the Raptors are sliding. The Rockets are on a downfall into the very depths of the NBA basement. Something's got to give tonight.
Yeah, a lot of GMs on teams that are in contention watching this one closely tonight as the Rockets will be in sell mode, and a lot of talk going into the trade deadline about the Raptors and what they're going to do with the likes of Norm Powell and Kyle Lowry. One team that I feel particularly bad for, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who still, with Houston having lost 20 in a row, are still in last place in the conference, half a game back of the Houston Rockets. So they couldn't even use a 20-game losing streak for a team to get out of the West basement. But yes, no, this is the Cleveland loss really stings for Toronto. They have everyone back now. This is as must win as it gets for the Raptors if they want to get back in the hunt for a play-in spot.
And Pat, we're really talking about this Raptors team, the probable reality with maybe a loss tonight if they really seal it in about maybe this team looking at some options ahead of the trade deadline.
Yeah, I was worried about, because they went on that run to get themselves back to 500. I was worried that, and I'm not saying this has happened, so I'm definitely not confirming my thoughts, but I was worried about you put all that into getting yourself back into it, and then maybe the drop-off happens. And I think there's at the very least a decent chance that's what has happened here. Yes, I would suggest that if this one does not go the proper way, that's another indicator that, you know, maybe a different approach than we had thought a few months ago to the NBA's trade deadline for the Raptors.
And away from the Raptors, I will say the video I watched last night of the Rockets head coach in his press conference is one of the most depressing things I've ever seen in my life. Yep. We talk all the time about you play sports for a living and how easy that must be. You're a millionaire. Go watch that interview, because it's not easy and it's not fun, and one of the hardest things I've ever watched. I feel for that man. Really, really hard right now.
We'll finish. Yeah. Colin, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing. Sorry.
All right, we'll finish off headlines with the NCAA March Madness Tournament. We have some bracket busters, Patrick. Your favorite sound effect gets to be played again. 13-seeded Ohio takes down Virginia 62-58. Abilene Christian takes down the number 3 seed in Texas 53-52. No other upsets today. Gentlemen, I know you've all filled out brackets. Just how screwed are you? Klein, have you just torn them all up into pieces? Are you bothering to look anymore? Where is your bracket currently?
So I still like to do like having the sheet with me and using a highlighter, and we don't have a printer here. So I asked my wife to print it off at her work. She forgot it on Friday. She said, "Oh, I could go get that today if you want." And I told her not to bother. It is an absolute massacre. I have one team left in the Final Four. That's Gonzaga. So not exactly out on a limb there. No, my bracket is absolutely annihilated.
I don't know how mine is, because I don't really pay attention once I put it in. I'll wait until the end to see where I rank. I do have to say, we did have one bracket buster today with number 7 Oregon knocking off number 2 Iowa, 95-80. So Oregon is on. So we had that today. Right now, number 11 UCLA has a healthy lead on number 14 Abilene Christian, 24-12. That game is in the first half. And number 1 Gonzaga did move on to the Sweet 16 themselves. Although, you know, it was a little bit closer in the second half, 87-71, a big enough first half lead for the first seed Gonzaga, so they move on. But we did have the one bracket buster today with Oregon knocking off number 2 Iowa. So there's another top 2 seed gone from the tournament.
Will, how's your bracket?
Well, you don't have a bracket, right?
It's pretty much in the toilet.
Well, that's right. You just didn't go in our bracket. You're in another one. So, yeah. Does anybody go in, or do you ever go into this thing expecting to win?
Well, I think I go in with more confidence than I had this year. The problem was I didn't really watch a ton of college basketball, nor keep up or do a ton of research before. Then you throw in the COVID factor. I just was a bizarre year, it feels like, for upsets. And apparently, I just didn't do enough of them. But I think, like all things in life, Pat, you got to have a little confidence in it, no?
Yeah. Me and Klein's strong suits are confident. Klein, yes. you entered 5 brackets all the same. Different?
Yes.
Ugh. Are you rethinking that strategy for next year?
No. Again,
this is a guy that's in 8 fantasy football leagues.
Yeah, but at least there are 8 different teams as well. But I'm saying, like, would you rethink the strategy? 5 different brackets going into next year.
No, that'd be too much to keep track of. And I still think, even with a number of different brackets, I still think I'd be screwed. I would just be screwed in more ways. And even I thought I'd get a bit of a break because I did a women's bracket this year too. First day was awesome. I've lost 3 of 4 today. So even on the women's side, I'm getting my ass kicked.
Never change.
The women's side, it feels like you just go no upsets. You're probably laughing.
Well, that was it yesterday, but That was it yesterday, but today we got 11 seed BYU with a win over Rutgers. There's a 13 seed with a win, Wright State with a victory over Arkansas. So the underdog's coming up bigger today.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. The beer tastes better when it's bought from the place that cheers for your team. Visit your local Calgary Co-op Wine Spirits beer today.
You still have time to set your lineup for the week ahead in fantasy hockey as we go inside hockey every Monday with our next guest as Nick Alberga joins us from Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.ca, our fantasy hockey expert. Hello, Nick. How are you, my friend?
Pat, I'm fantastic. Looking forward to round 78 of Tkachuk versus Tkachuk this year.
Yeah, just 78 of 200 tonight from Canadian Tire Center in Ottawa. Well, we had a coaching change a few weeks ago here in Calgary, but the most recent coaching change comes from Buffalo, where Ralph Krueger was relieved last week. From a fantasy hockey standpoint, how does that change things?
Yeah, firstly, I think Buffalo was three weeks overdue on making that call. I honestly feel like they put him out of his misery, Ralph Krueger, and just said, you know what, enough of this. You got to go because we feel bad for you. You know, normal times in fantasy hockey, you expect an initial boost. We're seeing it in Calgary so far. I think they're a much better team lately, 4-2-0, a tough loss on Saturday against the Maple Leafs after winning on Friday. But for Buffalo, I just don't see a turnaround quite clearly. I think when you look at that roster, there's probably three guys I would keep if I have them on my fantasy roster. One is Jack Eichel. You're not going to get the value. He's injured right now. Taylor Hall, there's a possibility he's elsewhere between now and April 12th. And Rasmus Dahlin. I think it's just so hard to find an elite defenseman if you want to include Dahlin in that conversation, at least from a skating standpoint he is. I think you got to hope for the best when it comes to him for rest of season purposes. But guys like Olofsson, Reinhardt, they can go right now. And As I told you a couple weeks back, I think you have to investigate the trade market on Jack Eichel because who knows if he's coming back this season. Yep. And if he does, I just don't know how inspired he'll be either.
Let's move to Pittsburgh, where you wanted to focus on some guy named Sidney Crosby.
Yes, so we'll tie it into Evgeny Malkin and some injury replacements there. But first and foremost, I think I just have to bring to light again how great Sidney Crosby is. And we all know this, especially in this country. But When Malkin's out, Crosby steps up. When Crosby's out, Malkin steps up. And I think that's the key here that I'm getting at. I think it's a really, really good time to buy on Sidney Crosby if you have the opportunity to do so. I'm getting Malkin is week to week. We even saw it this weekend, Pat. Two games for Crosby, a goal and two assists. I had the crack staff over at Sportsnet Stats put the numbers together for yours truly. 145 career games without Geno Malkin in the lineup for Sidney Crosby. 62 goals, 114 assists, 176 points, 1.21 points per game, and Pittsburgh's record, 83-49-13. So that tells you that he always elevates his game, or seems to usually, when Malkin's out. Now for injury replacements, Pat. Internally, Jared McCann moves down the middle, coming back from injury the other day. Evan Rodriguez and Kasperi Kapanen on the wings. I think externally, you look at names like Max Domi, Chandler Stephenson, Dylan Strome, and Adam Henrique of the Anaheim Ducks. I've thrown Trevor Zegras in that conversation. We'll talk about momentarily as well. And I think a cheeky little trade option, too, if you're looking for a center, is Evgeny Kuznetsov. Has 7 points in the last 8 games, and he's back with Alex Ovechkin, who's been on fire. So that's a really good fit, too.
In conversation with Nick Alberga, our Sportsnet fantasy analyst, his latest 20 fantasy thoughts up at Sportsnet.ca right now. You mentioned the Anaheim Ducks, and you've got your eye on a few young members of that team.
Yeah, it's like that old Nintendo game, going duck hunting this week. I think you just look at this rookie crop in general, and I think you look at the Anaheim Ducks for rest of season purposes. I can see this team playing a role of spoiler. You know, I know there's a couple of vets on that roster. I'm curious to see what Bob Murray does between now and the deadline, but the injection of youth is certainly in full bore there, and who knows about the future of Bob Murray in general, the GM. But I think Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale, who was called up out of the blue last week, are here to stay. They're just exceptional talents. A 3-game point streak for Zegras, who's dual eligible, center left wing. And Drysdale, 2 games, 1 goal, and 1 assist. I know it was a bit of a struggle back on Saturday, but this guy's already an elite skater in this league. The way he can move the puck and facilitate, I think is uncanny. And there's, you know, outside of him, there's no one on Anaheim who can do that. That's why I think Drysdale's staying. And, 4-game week for Anaheim here. Two against Minnesota, two against St. Louis. I think there's the potential to buy low on John Gibson as well, who's day-to-day right now. But again, to reiterate my point, I think, you know, the Ducks in general could be a really, really good spoiler between now and the end of the season. And again, we're trying to extract the most value possible here.
What's going on with Toronto's goaltending, and how should a fantasy owner be looking at that?
Yeah, it's a loaded question, especially when you're paying Freddie Anderson that money and he's not really producing. But Pat, as you know, he is dinged up right now. They're calling it day-to-day. It's driving me crazy, this whole COVID protocol. We're finding nothing out on injuries. And it was already vague to begin with. Now you add in COVID and Zoom, and you're getting nothing. So they're telling us day-to-day on Freddie Anderson. I think for the most part, if he is in the lineup, I think you sit him right now, make sure he's right. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with Carey Price, right? And he's come back to relative form, which is great to see. I do still think there's some buy-low appeal, if you want to call it that, in Freddie Anderson. He can't get as bad as he has been lately. And again, we don't know the extent of what he's dealing with. He can really, really be hampered right now. We don't know it at all. So I think, you know, part and parcel, I think it's imperative you pick up Jack Campbell right now. Especially if you have Freddie Anderson to handcuff that tandem, I think is smart going forward. And I think Campbell goes without saying, and you've seen it in Calgary a couple times now, four starts, two shutouts this season. I think he's worthy of more playing time. I think health is a big concern for him as well. But I would definitely advocate picking up Jack Campbell right now.
And finally, we're about an hour away until lineups need to be locked. So tell us about the week ahead in terms of the schedule. What can we exploit?
Yes, so a 56-game slate, and again, that's all subject to changes, of course, with this COVID world we live in, but there are a total of 20 teams with four games. I'll list them off quickly. Anaheim, Arizona, Buffalo, Calgary, Chicago, Colorado, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Edmonton, Florida, Montreal, Nashville, New Jersey, the Rangers, Ottawa, Philadelphia, San Jose, St. Louis, and Winnipeg. And again, if I went too fast, you can check it out on sportsnet.ca, my 20 fantasy thoughts as well. Three teams I like their schedule the most. The Anaheim Ducks have a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. Adam Henrique, Jamie Drysdale, Trevor Zegras are names I would look at there. The Montreal Canadiens, the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, three against Edmonton, and also on Sunday against the Ottawa Senators. Jonathan Drouin and Philippe Deneau are guys I would look at, especially Deneau, and with the news of Jesperi Kotkaniemi today going on the COVID list, I think for sure I would look at that name. And the New York Rangers, Alexi Lafreniere, I would circle back on that. Circle the name Vitali Kravtsov, by the way. He's in quarantine right now. Coming by way of the KHL, and I think he could factor in eventually on a line with Artemi Panarin, if you can believe him, and he could make his debut as soon as the 25th, by the way. Right now, Colin Blackwell's that guy, 5-on-5, who's playing with Panarin and Strome, so have a look there. Some other names to look at on waivers, Anthony Mantha with Detroit, Jesse Puljujärvi with Edmonton, Anthony DeClaire with Florida, Ryan Johansson with Nashville, Scott Laughton with Philadelphia, and lastly, again, Colin Blackwell with the New York Rangers.
Great stuff, Nick. Be well. We'll check out your fantasy thoughts on sportsnet.ca, and we will talk to you again next Monday. Thank you, my friend.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a good night.
Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Calgary Co-op isn't just locally owned. They're owned by you and you and you. Visit your Calgary Co-op. Together for good.
And one thing to keep an eye on, with Armia and Kotkaniemi on the COVID list, it sounds like Edmonton-Montreal at 5 o'clock is hanging in the balance as to whether or not they're going to play. We'll keep you updated on that as the afternoon goes along. That'll do it for the Sports Drive at 5. Up next, Calgary Flames warm-up. It's the Flames and the Senators just after 5. We're 2 minutes away from your comprehensive one-hour pregame show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.